Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. It's Laura from Freedom from the Bondage Group and Why Missing.
Hey everybody, I'm Laura. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April the 14th, 2016, and my home group is Freedom from Bondage, which meets on Sunday nights at 6:30 p.m. in Wyomissing at the Atonement Parish Center. I have to say, coming here tonight is like coming home almost. I have lived in Virginia since the late 60s, but my father's family is from Bethlehem, and I had no idea how close this was to Bethlehem. I used to come here, you know, all the time in the summer. So, yeah, it's neat to be here. It's also, you know, coming to an AA meeting always puts everything into perspective for me. You know, I can get so lost in the details of work and, you know, financial stuff and, like, my own stuff in my head. But you know what? I come to a meeting and it's just like, boom. You know, I am so grateful to be sober today and to be alive and to be surrounded by people who are miracles. Like, you know, how cool is that? It just has a way of putting everything in perspective. I also love the fact that when I come to a meeting, I'm amongst my peeps. We were reading last night at our home group in the family afterwards, and there's that sentence about, you know, sometimes the outsiders are shocked when we burst into merriment over some, you know, tragic escapade from the past. And, you know, perfect example of people who aren't in recovery not getting my sense of humor is this is actually my second reincarnation in recovery. I got sober again 2 years ago, but had 15 years in Virginia before I came up here and relapsed. When I was in that first incarnation, I remember my friend Tracy got sober, and I always celebrate Christmas at my parents', right? And Tracy had worked so hard. She got me this beautiful glass Christmas ball, and she put my name on it. It was just so beautiful. So I went to hang it on my parents' tree, and I go, oh my gosh, you guys, this is so exciting. Tracy shoplifted all her gifts last year, and this year she made them. And my parents are going, you know, but see, that is the kind of thing, like, it's so nice to be able to celebrate that now. And, you know, you guys taught me how to do that. You know, when I got here, I hadn't laughed in the longest time. This is my big book. It's a third edition. None of the pages, the 164 pages in the beginning, are on the spine at all. That should show you a little bit about how I was brought up in AA and what's important to me. I believe that the solution is in here. I was taken through it, and I'm going through it again. I love it. And I will talk a lot about that tonight as I kind of talk about my experience and going through the steps and that kind of thing. So the first drink I remember taking was actually when I was about 8. My grandparents were down in Virginia visiting us, and my grandfather had this little special wine he liked. And so my brother and I each got a tiny little glass because, you know, they wanted to include us in the celebration. And as a child, I did everything quickly. And so I did like I usually do, and I just downed it. Now, normally, I didn't ask for seconds of anything. You know, had it been milk or water, I would have been done. But in this case, I put out my glass and I asked my mom for more. And I remember it being very confused when she said to me, Laura, you're supposed to sip it. And, you know, the only thing I can think is that there was some little thing going on already, you know, and I realized when I got into recovery what that thing was. You know, that's the allergy. I'm bodily different because I see no reason to stop once I've started. In fact, I have always drunk for effect. I see no reason to sit there and have a beer. I don't enjoy the taste of it. I drink because I need to escape from what goes on in here. I really, like I said, I didn't think anything of that until I got into recovery. I started drinking with friends sort of on a casual basis in about ninth grade when I discovered boys with cars and alcohol. It was so marvelous. That was back in the days that it was when it was fun. The only problem was that my mother had a nose like a bloodhound, and I would walk in the door. I wouldn't even be drunk. I'd say hello. She'd go, "You've been drinking? You're grounded." So I was grounded for the first 2 years of high school. And so I did what, you know, any good alcoholic does, and I figured out that my best friend Kathy's mom didn't care if we drank, and so I started spending the night with Kathy. And, you know, I didn't really think that we were drinking differently, but now I know that we were. Kathy had a shut off. You know, back when we were still, we weren't sure about whether her mom liked it or not. We were doing that thing where you mix a little bit of everything, you top it all with orange juice. Kathy would go, "This is disgusting, I'm not drinking this." And I would just grab it and be like, "It doesn't matter what it tastes like. Let's bring on the effect. And if a little works well, then a lot is going to work even better." I was always the one getting sick. I was always the one passing out. And the getting sick part is significant because as a child, I had a huge phobia of throwing up. I avoided it at all costs. I mean, I was in an Italian restaurant the other night, and I gave my friend all the scallops and the linguine because I ate scallops one night and got sick and never ate them again. You know, so you would think that, all right, you know, we finished off the orange juice and all that stuff. I was so sick that night. You know, you would think that I would then be like, "I'm never drinking again." A couple weeks later, "Oh, well, you know what? Maybe I didn't eat first. That's it. So this time I need to eat." You know, and then it was like, you know, what's the rhyme? Liquor on beer, beer on liquor. So I was always trying to change things up. I decided, you know, I was lightweight. But I wasn't drinking like other people. And unbeknownst to me, there was no learning curve. It was what the big book describes as the complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. I learned from the scallops, never ate them again. The alcohol, boom, out of my mind. You know, I would drink for years and years into the future. I drank a lot in high school and had a marvelous time. And the thing that I liked about it was that I would have told you that I had a normal childhood and kind of everything was fine. What I realized when I got into recovery is that it wasn't normal. It had always, the things that went on in my head had always gone on. And so I thought it was just normal. But what I realized when I got here is that even though I got here because the alcohol I thought was the problem, that's not my problem. That's a symptom of my problem. The alcohol was a solution for my problem. As a small child and all the way up, and now, you know, when I'm not in fit spiritual condition, I'm crazy. I'm the kind of person who will be walking down the hall, somebody will walk towards me and they don't say hello, and immediately I can't focus on anything all day because I'm like thinking about all the interactions I had with them recently and did I piss them off and, you know, all that kind of thing. I was always self-conscious. It took me forever to get dressed in the morning because I just felt like people were going to be looking at me and thinking, "God, she's weird." I never felt like I fit in, which was not the case. Because I had plenty of friends, but I felt I was that person who felt like I was alone in a crowd. And I always felt worthless. I felt like I wasn't good in anything, which wasn't true because, you know, I was in the top band. I broke a record in swimming, you know, so it wasn't what was going on. What was off, I realize now, was my perception of what was going on because things were so messed up in my head. I had trouble. Sometimes I would have, like, there'd be three of us girls who'd be friends. I used to get so jealous of the other two because I was always convinced they were better friends than with the two of them than they were with me. You know, never mind dating boys. It was not pretty because I was so insecure. You know, and what alcohol did was it gave me, for the first time in my life, relief from that. It gave me relief from the fear. It gave me relief from the resentment that I would get when people didn't behave the way that I wanted them to. You didn't say hello to me? Well, you know, I mean, that was the way I lived. And the other thing that was going on with me was that I was so controlling. I felt the need to run the show all the time. And it was more with my own stuff. But my parents were very relieved when my younger brother started telling me no, because for a long time I told him exactly what to do, you know, just very bossy. I wanted things my way, and I would get upset when they weren't. So alcohol really gave me relief from that. And when I got here, what I discovered is that is truly my problem, because that is what leads me back to drinking every single time. You know, without a solution, and, you know, the solution of AA is the spiritual one, without that, I'm stuck in here, and a drink is going to look like a really, really good thing. I got to college, and I wasn't kind of a big fish in a small pool anymore. I was at a large southern university that was very traditional. I am not very traditional. I pretty much went there because I thought my parents wanted me to. Because I felt so worthless all the time, I got my opinions about myself from whether you approved of me or not. I was a complete chameleon. You know, I could hang out with any group at school and fit in because I became so astute in figuring out what people wanted for me. The consequence of that was that I had no idea who I was. I had no opinions, didn't know what my favorite color was. And, you know, when it came time to go to college, that was the school my parents liked. My father taught there, and I was like, boom, let's go. But it was not the right place for me. I was miserable. And, you know, it was strange because I actually drank less in college. I think I sort of threw myself more into school and used that as kind of a way of distracting myself, but I became more and more depressed. The other thing that I did, alcohol has not been the only problem for me. There are other things that I've used, not substances, but other behaviors. There was another behavior that I started resorting to in college, and what I would do for years was kind of flip-flop between alcoholism and then this other kind of rigid behavior around food and exercise. One numbed the stuff, the alcoholism did, and the other one made me feel like I was okay or superior. But the thing about it is that nothing that I ever used to try and fill the emptiness in here actually filled it. Nothing was ever enough. You know, whether it was that I was shopping or, you know, I was in a relationship, you know, I always thought, okay, you know, this is going to do it. But I still had that emptiness, and I still had that feeling of there is fundamentally something wrong with me. If you really knew me, you would hate me. So I just developed this sort of public face, and, you know, people didn't know what was going on. I think they started to figure out in college because I, you know, rapidly by the end of my fourth year was just, I was miserable. I no longer felt like I had a purpose in life, wasn't really interested in hanging out with people. And I discovered drinking alone. I started stealing it from my roommates, and that was the be-all and end-all, because I wasn't drinking to be social. I was drinking to numb myself. So drinking alone was fabulous. I got a job after college, and my drinking progressed from being, you know, that kind of on weekends, having fun with my friends, to nightly drink to get drunk, hide it from your roommate's stuff. You know, this was not anything I wanted anybody to know about. And there was some power, I think, in the secrecy for me. I ended up getting married And one day my husband came home unexpectedly, and at this point I was in graduate school to be a teacher, and he came on home unexpectedly one morning, and I was sitting there, you know, with a case of beer at 8 o'clock in the morning. He had come home from work, and, you know, he was like, "I think you're an alcoholic," and he sort of petted me, "It's going to be okay," and I'm like, "Yeah, I think I am too," and so he referred me to this friend of his who took me to a meeting. Well, oh my gosh, the people there who'd been to jail and had, you know, DUIs, and I had nothing in common with y'all, so I was going to do it on my own. And so what I did was I just went back to that other behavior because I couldn't not do something. You know, when things got bad enough in that arena and my husband got concerned about that stuff, I did what we do and I left him and really proceeded to self-destruct and almost died as a result of that other behavior, but, you know, got some help. But the thing was that when I had to stop doing that, I started drinking again. And this time, you know, the disease, alcoholism, is so progressive. And for me, it was marked because no longer was it just nightly now. Weekends were just drink and pass out. I was doing nothing but teaching during the day and drinking in the evenings. Weekends, of course, I wasn't getting anything done. And it kind of stopped working. You know, for a long time, it numbed those feelings of worthlessness and emptiness. It stopped working, and I would just drink, and I would feel even more miserable. I remember cutting myself, you know, just anything to try and block that despair that I felt. I found myself having some withdrawal in the mornings, which back in the day, this was like the late 90s, it was a problem because I was writing checks for my alcohol. And so I thought to myself, okay, you know, this has got to stop. This is out of control. And, you know, I was completely miserable. And you know what I remembered? I remembered how kind and welcoming the people in AA had been to me. And they, when I decided not to do it, when I decided to kind of do it on my own, like, they didn't chase me. And I really appreciated that because I didn't need anybody telling me, "Well, you're going to die if you don't do this." They just said, "Hey, you know, if you ever change your mind, we'll be here." So I went right back to AA. And this time I started hearing stuff, and I'm like nodding my head. People talked about not having a shut off, like starting and not being able to stop. In other words, the allergy. And they talked about, despite consequences, having continued to drink again and again. They talked about being sober for periods of time, or, you know, like abstinent for periods of time, and going back to it, sometimes with no thought of the previous consequences. Like, just, you know, "Hey, glass of vodka looks nice this afternoon." And I completely identified. But I also heard people talking about, like, my real problem. People said they grew up and they didn't feel like they fit in. And they, you know, sometimes felt like people were looking at them and they didn't like them. And they talked about, you know, kind of feeling worthless and empty. You know, and the fact that they shared that with me helped so much. Because my life had gotten so small. I didn't care about anything but drinking, and I went to work because I needed money. I had no social life, and I didn't care about anything. And all of a sudden, these people are talking about having had experiences similar to mine, and all of a sudden, I started to feel kind of like, you know, maybe I'm not as much of a freak as I thought. You know, like, maybe. Yet maybe these people are like me. And I started to want what those people had. And the people who had what I wanted were the people who were greeting me. You know, those people greeted newcomers. They were positive. When they shared about obstacles they were confronting, they also shared about how they were using the solution provided by Alcoholics Anonymous to deal with that. They were working all three sides of the triangle. They were of service. They were well-rooted in the fellowship, had a little posse around them of, you know, individuals they could call or hang out with. And, you know, they were deeply rooted in the steps and working them all the time. And most of all, they had a relationship with a power higher than themselves. And I thought when I first got here that I was linked to you all by the problem, but I'm not. I have in common the common solution with people who are in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did everything they told me to do. And quite frankly, I was really fortunate because I fell in with a group of people who, you know, it was a big book study. They believed the solution was in here. They said, get a sponsor. I got a sponsor. They said, join a home group. So I joined that home group. They said, get a job in the home group. So I got a job. And, you know, over the next 15 years, I would do multiple jobs there. Plenty of opportunities to be of service. They also said, you know, go to as many meetings as possible. Call people when I'm having a difficult time. And reach out to people rather than calling people and saying, oh, woe is me, I had such a horrible day. Reach out to people and say, hey, how are you today? Tell me what's going on with you. And I found that actually that was one of the things that got me out of this place faster than anything, was asking somebody about themselves. Now, I also had to deal with my own stuff. I didn't, you know, my friend Danny, who I got sober with, said to me, you know what, no matter how bad you think it is, it's worse. And that was completely true because step one, and that's true this time too, step one has deepened for me throughout recovery. You know, when I got to AA the first time, I realized the alcohol stuff was out of control. But during that time period of going through the book with my sponsor, I started to remember things. I started to remember the impact that I'd had on people, the pain I had caused people. And I, by going through the book, started to realize that this wasn't something that I could control on my own. Given the allergy and given the obsession, that mental blank spot, that place I get to when everything I know about myself as a drinker, all that fear I have, oh, I don't want this to happen, none of that stuff is effective against me taking a drink. Because it's just going to blanket over everything and I'll find some excuse. Oh, I'm really happy today. Oh, it's raining. Oh, it's sunny. You know, basically I drank because I breathed. There were excuses, as the book says, you know, that I was satisfied with some of the time. But that actually, it was understanding the obsession, I think, really, that convinced me that I was powerless. Because if it were just for the allergy, just for the fact that I had trouble stopping once I start, I could just put the plug in the jug and be fine. But quite frankly, if I could do that, I wouldn't be here. I can't do that. I always get to a place where alcohol looks like a viable option for me. And that's insane, given the stuff that went on with me. So that, I think, you know, the fact that I was hanging out with people who said they had a solution and they had what I wanted. They were living productive lives. They were having fun. They were connected and, you know, being of service. And they had, they just seemed serene. The fact that they had what I wanted and the fact that I now knew that I had a terminal illness, because I could see the progression too. And I said to myself, you know what? I'm no different from those people who had jail and DUIs. That's just something I haven't done yet. You know, so I was seeing things in a completely different light. And there's nothing like knowing that something's pretty much going to kill me to get me motivated to do stuff. So step one was like that for me. But for me, it was really key to understand the obsession. I also had to understand how that spiritual malady had fit in my life. That's what the emptiness was about. That's what the worthlessness, the feelings of worthlessness and being less than were about. That is the spiritual malady that really truly is my problem. I wasn't keen, quite frankly, on the whole higher power God thing. I had turned my back on the religion that I grew up in when I went off to college and kind of swore I'd never have anything to do with it again. And so I was a little, I was a little afraid when my sponsor told, you know, we did the third step prayer together, and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, turn my will and my life over. I better understand this thing. So I checked out a whole stack of books on all these various organized religions from the library, and I went home and I sat in the living room, and before I was through the first one, I'm like crying, calling my sponsor, I can't do this. And she said, you know what, you don't have to have, the beginning steps don't say anything about faith or trust. It just says in two that I came to believe. I can come to believe because other people believe, people who have what I want. In three, turning my will and my life over, she explained to me, the way I do that is I do 4 through 12. So it was okay for me to start with willingness. I didn't have to start with any faith or belief. And the willingness for me, it's a funny thing, because I can really only know that I'm willing in retrospect. Because there have been times, like my first four step, you know, where I am actually currently working on one and procrastinating a little bit, so let's throw that one in there too. You know, I just said, okay, I'm ready to do this, you know, I'm ready to move on. But, oh my gosh, there were just people who hadn't heard from me in years who I needed to call, and the house was immaculate because I was cleaning like a mad woman, avoiding all this stuff. So obviously, I wasn't as willing as I thought. And then there were times where I thought, oh, I really don't want to do this. But I took the action anyway. That's willingness. And so to me, beginning with willingness at three is just about, you know, my sponsor say, you know, you've done three when you pick up your pen or your pencil to do four. There's nothing more required. There's no action in those first three steps. So I picked up my pen to do four, and it, like I said, took me longer than I had intended, but that was incredible. And particularly for me, that fourth column where I had to start taking a look at my part in stuff, because all I had ever done before was take a look at your part in stuff. You know, I looked at my distant relationship with my father, and I was like, well, it's all his fault. But you know what? Every time he walked past my bedroom and didn't say hello after work in the evenings, I stayed in my bedroom. Did I ever seek him out? No, because I was testing him. I thought, if you really love me, you'll come find me. I mean, it was hugely eye-opening. I had never thought about that kind of stuff before. And, you know, at first I kind of wanted to go into that, oh, woe is me, I'm horrible mode, but my sponsor just said to me, you know, this is about getting a relationship with a power higher than yourself. It's by clearing away this sludge in the pipe between you and a power higher than yourself that you then will be able to bathe in the sunlight of the spirit. So, I mean, really, in lots of ways, being able to look at my part was hugely empowering. Because I stopped feeling like a victim. It wasn't about everybody wronging me anymore. I discovered that I really had choices, and there were places that I'd set the ball rolling. And, you know, if I don't do that anymore, then maybe that stuff won't happen again. So that was incredible. I was scared to do the fifth step and read all this stuff to my sponsor because, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking other people are spending a lot of time thinking about me if they don't like me. So I was convinced that I was going to say this to my sponsor and she'd be like, oh, leave my house. I cannot deal with you anymore. But you know what? Half the time she's going, oh, yeah, I did that too. And we ended up laughing through a lot of it. And the stuff that I really thought I would never tell anybody in my whole life, I told her. And she didn't judge me. And that was hugely freeing. You know, she shared some of her own experience. And I started to realize, you know, thank goodness she shared that experience with me. That was stuff that she used to think made her a freak. And all of a sudden, it made her uniquely useful to me. So thank goodness for her for doing that. I, you know, spent that hour, you know, went over the character defects. There were lots and lots of patterns in my fourth step that I didn't see. She helped me find those. And I went home and prayed for an hour and took a look at those character defects. And, you know, I don't remove those. I do have to make an effort and meet my higher power halfway. But, and not everything goes away on my time. Things go away on the universe's time. I still have a bunch I'm working on, but it's, you know, it's gotten a lot better. Progress, not perfection, you know. I made a list of people to whom I owed amends, and I went out and did that. And really, most of those turned out so much better than I imagined that they would. People actually wished me well. It was amazing. I thought to myself, really? I mean, and some people even said to me, what are you talking about? You know, I started to realize how really twisted my mind is. Like, with a lot of this stuff, I'm the only one still thinking about this stuff. These people have forgotten about it. You know, so much of my difficulties with other people reside solely in my head. You know, it happened last night. I shared and I felt like, oh my gosh, I was kind of angry at the time. You know, should I have shared? Did I come across angry? Checked with my friend Jen afterwards. She was at the meeting and she's like, what are you talking about? You know, so I need a reality check a lot of the time. 10 just meant taking that spot check inventory, and having practiced in 4 made it really easy to get into these situations where I was jammed up, but able to see my part. I started, you know, praying about it, calling other people, making amends where I needed to. And with the 11th step, it was wide open. Like, I love the fact that there's so much information about prayer and meditation out there. There were a lot of sources that I went to for help with that. I will tell you, though, that we have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And people have it at various places. For me, it happened at 12 when I started working with other women. Oh my gosh, because I will tell you, I had felt so much of my life like I was such a freak. You know, I'd done all this horrible, self-destructive, crazy stuff. And what I started to realize in working with other women was that my experience was my greatest gift. Because when I shared, you know, about my drinking and that kind of thing, I'd see them going like this. You know, and they get that feeling that I had in the beginning. Oh my gosh, I'm so relieved. Somebody else knows what I'm talking about. And I don't know, it was crazy. I started to feel like, wait, maybe my life, like, I don't know, maybe I was being taken care of the whole time. You know, and in thinking that, I was like, well, there really has been something that's had my back this whole time. Because when I share this experience, I can provide somebody else with that ability to, like, identify and not feel alone. You know, it's a really simple concept, but so, so powerful. I mean, it completely changed my life. And there is no time that I feel closer to my higher power than when I'm sitting on my living room couch with another woman in AA. And I know what she's thinking, because I thought it about my first sponsor. She's thinking, oh my gosh, you know, she's being of so much help to me. I'm just taking up her time. I must be a burden to her. Uh-uh. I can tell you that the women that I've worked with are like the joy of my existence, because I hear so much of my own story in what they say. And it's just amazing to watch somebody grow spiritually. I was working with a sponsee today, and she said, you know, the most amazing thing happened the other day. You know, it just sort of felt like, you know, like God kind of set that up. And I wanted to cry, because that's the essence of God consciousness, isn't it? To be able to see those seemingly little things that happen in my life, but to be able to see them all the time. You know, like, I guess I used to think they were coincidences or something. You know, they're not. The problem was, that after 15 years of pretty good recovery, I stopped doing what I was supposed to be doing. It didn't happen all at once. It happened gradually, but I stopped going to meetings. I stopped calling my sponsor. There was a lot of stuff going on with me, and I clammed up about it, so I wasn't being honest. Didn't want to talk about any of it. I started to isolate, and the first thing that happened was that I'd had, because of contact with a power higher than myself and, you know, having worked the steps and kind of doing all three of those sides, I had had a reprieve from that crazy self-centered, like, oh, I'm a horrible person kind of thinking. And that is the first stuff that came back, you know, my real problem. I remember getting some criticism at work and I just couldn't let go of it. I'm a teacher. I obsessed about this thing the whole summer and was so anxious at the beginning of the next school year that I couldn't go back as a head teacher. I went back as an assistant. You know, I was losing it. And the fall of 2012, I reached that point where I was like, there's no reason to live anymore. I want to die. I'm either going to kill myself right now or drink. And I honestly felt that I had no purpose, that there was no reason to live, it was never going to get better, and I felt completely disconnected from everybody. And I drank. I actually did it in secret. I continued to go to meetings every now and then. People didn't know, and it was like, it was horrible. There's nothing worse than being an alcoholic, going to meetings, and acting like you're sober when you're not. It was horrible. I felt so guilty and so ashamed. But at first, the alcohol gave me relief from that stuff that was going on with me. And then it progressed again. I wasn't able to hide it after a couple years. I stopped going to work. I wouldn't even call in. I would disappear in my house for, you know, a good week. My friends would call my parents. They would come get me. They lived in the same town. I ended up in ERs. Horrible withdrawal. I only had a little withdrawal the time before, and I never ended up in an ER before. It was awful. I went to two treatment centers the summer of 2015. Drank right after the day I left the first one, and was abstinent 8 months after I left the second one. Each time, it was pretty much my parents who sent me on my way. But in April of 2016, I was the one who called them. It was no longer working, and I couldn't not drink. I couldn't stop, and I couldn't not drink. And I called them, and I came up here for treatment. I have now joined the ranks of people who came to this area of Pennsylvania and never left. I actually have Pennsylvania flights, even though I say y'all still. I know you guys have probably noticed that. And this time, even though the other places had said things like, you know, you need sober living, you should do extended care, I had always been, no, I'll stay for 30 days and leave. This time, they said, you know what? Oh, I can't believe I left this out. I'm still having trouble with this, actually. I called the principal of my school. I'd worked there 24 years. I called her before I left to come up here for treatment, and I said, you know, I think I'm going to miss the end of the school year. And she said, well, we're not renewing your contract next year. I was devastated because that was such a huge part of my identity. But, you know, and I still grieve it, but I think I'm starting to feel like that may have been the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, somebody needed to say to me, this isn't okay. And so I got up here for treatment, and they said, you know what, you don't need 30 days, you need 4 months. And I said, show me to my room. And then at the end of the 4 months, they said, you know what, you really need sober living. And I stayed up here for sober living, got myself a sponsor. I picked my home group, Freedom from Bondage, because the people there are, as my friends say, doing the deal. You know, they're helping other people. They're loving, kind, and tolerant. They're actually applying the principles of that are in this book to all their affairs. You know, they're doing service. They're connected with each other. And when I hear about the problem in that meeting, I hear about how to use the solution to deal with that stuff. And for me, that's the stuff that I need to hear. I need that hope in there. And I need other people in AA to tell me how they've used this stuff to deal with the obstacles that come up. Because even though things are better, there's still a lot of tough stuff going on. And there's still plenty of days where I'm not spiritually fit at all. But what I learned from my relapse was that it's all about taking the action. What people who are sober long-term do is that when the rubber meets the road and they feel horrible, they go to meetings, they call their sponsor, you know, they show up. And that's what I stopped doing. So I take the action today. I'm working through the steps again. I'm sponsoring again. I have a terrific sponsor. And I'm recultivating that relationship with a power higher than myself. Because that is the only thing that will keep me from looking at alcohol and thinking that that's a viable option for me. That's the only solution to this crazy stuff that goes on between my two ears. There are other things that, outside things that I've used, doctors and that kind of thing, those things were much more helpful to me once I actually got into recovery and started doing this stuff. I don't think I can really think of anything else. I can't tell you how, you know, honored I am to be here tonight with you all. And I want to thank Lauren so much for asking me. Really, really delightful. Thank you so much.